ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, I'm Richard Ady. This is The Money. You probably remember this. I certainly do. Generations of school children have sung this song. It's very easy to learn. The trouble is that reading's not so easy to learn for maybe more people than you realise. About a third of school students struggle with it, and getting on for half of adults do. So what's going on? What's it costing us? How can we fix it? And a couple of other things too. This problem begins at school. Jordana Hunter is Program Director of Education at the Grattan Institute.
So across the country, it is about one in three students, but there are big differences between states and territories. So in the Northern Territory, for example, about half of students aren't reaching that proficient level in reading, whereas in the ACT and Victoria, which are our most advantaged state and territory, it's about a quarter of students aren't reaching that level. So we do see that difference, and it largely tracks socioeconomic disadvantage. Underperformance is definitely a burden borne mostly by disadvantaged students. So it's shocking to know that half of regional and remote students are not meeting the proficiency benchmark, and 60 to 70% of our First Nations students fall short. But I think it's important for your listeners to know that this is a problem for many students from advantaged families as well.
For them, the rate's a bit lower, between a fifth and a quarter are struggling. Overall, though, we're going in the wrong direction. Jessica Del Rio is at Equity Economics.
The OECD assesses the skills and knowledge of 15-year-olds and through their PISA test. And the latest results show that only 57% of students in Australia meet the Australian National Proficiency Standard for Reading. And Australia's performance is declining over time. Between 2000 and 2022, we reduced our percentage of students who were high performers, increased our percentage of low performers, and reduced the percentage of students meeting the national proficiency standards. What does this mean in human terms? Going to school day after day, week after week, for years, while being unable to read or read well, is, in the words of psychologist Stephen Dijkstrup, frequent and repetitive trauma for the student.
And of course, this affects everything else.
Reading is a really key foundational skill. It opens up academic success at school. It means that students can cope with the curriculum demands across all subject areas, from mathematics to science to the humanities and the arts. But it also has really significant implications for the life chances of students as they become young adults and enter the economy and engage with their community and society. So that is one of the reasons why we're focused so heavily on reading. Reading is not the only foundational skill, but it really is a gateway, I guess, to better opportunities.
If you're struggling with that foundational skill, you're more likely to muck up, to disrupt the class, to drop out.
Literacy contributes to whether you're going to finish school, go to uni, whether you're going to get a job, if you do get a job, what your income will be, or whether you might be reliant on welfare. People with low levels of literacy are more likely to end up in hospital, and they're going to have trouble navigating the health system. There's what's known as the school-to-prison pipeline for those children who can't read, because they're more likely to end up in prison. And we know that, for example, 30% of the prisoners in New South Wales are functionally illiterate. And this really perpetuates cycles of intergenerational disadvantage.
This affects much more than the 30% of the prison population. It's across the country.
We have over 2.3 million Australian adults who just don't have the literacy skills that they need for life. And some of them, about 620,000, have either really, really minimal or no reading and writing skills. So they can't find information. Then there's another 1.7 million Australian adults who have quite basic reading and writing skills, but they're going to have difficulty with things like reading instructions on medication or looking for a job online. Beyond that, we have 4 in 10 adults in Australia who likely struggle to read and understand the report that Equity Economics wrote about what to do about this, because about half of the adult Australian population can't construct meaning from complicated texts. So they would struggle with data in charts or graphs, or to write or understand professional documents. It'd make things like tax or divorce or wills all difficult to navigate.
What this costs us depends on how you do the sums.
Well, we focused on the lost earnings for the bottom 20% of students, which is around 800,000 students in Australia. And we worked out that as a group, these students could have had a life where they were earning an extra $12 billion over their lifetime if their school had lifted their literacy rates. And this is likely to be a conservative estimate.
$12 billion. It's costing the students who struggle with it the most. For each, what, for each year, for each cohort, what?
That's over their lifetime for the 800,000 students who are currently in school from kindy to year 12. And we calculated that by looking at what a known and effective intervention point is. We know that small group tutoring provides children with 4 months of extra learning, and that each additional year of learning a person completes increases their income by 10%. And we use that data to estimate the lifetime earnings for this 20% of children with the lowest levels of literacy who are likely to need extra support. Right. And that's how we got to the figure of $12 billion.
Yeah. Jordana Hunter at the Grattan Institute came up with a bigger number.
We calculated quite conservatively that the cost to Australia over the lifetime of students hardest hit by reading failure, so these are the students that drop out of school because they are such poor readers, is about $40 billion over their lifetime. Now, that's for the current cohort of students from that foundation year through to year 12. And that cost is really calculated based on the costs to the students and to society as a whole. So it includes longer periods of unemployment and lower paid jobs for students that don't finish school, as well as reduced tax revenues for government and increased spending on public health, welfare and justice, which we know, unfortunately, are related to the proportion of adults in the population that don't have strong literacy skills.
Wow, $40 billion over their lifetime. And would that keep on rolling, Jordana? The next cohort, if it has the same level of problems, that would cost more or less the same?
That's exactly right. So if we graduate all of our foundation year students through the end of their schooling and we don't fix this problem, we're just going to keep facing these costs.
Earlier, Jessica Del Rio mentioned the PISA tests, which provide 2 comparisons. You can see how you're going compared to how you were going before, and you can see how you're going compared to other OECD countries. Australia's going down on both measures, and not just in literacy. Richard Holden from the University of New South Wales.
So we have a disturbing number of OECD countries that have leapfrogged us in areas like mathematics, and that shows that others are getting better while we're getting worse, and that's a double whammy, really.
Yeah, I had a look at that. 16 countries have overtaken us in maths. Some of them you wouldn't be surprised about, Canada and Switzerland, but some of them you might be more surprised about. And that's just since 2000.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I would like to think that Australians would think of having an education system that's at least as good as Canada or Switzerland. And I'm not going to pick on other countries, but if people glance at that list, I think a lot of Australians would be taken aback at some of the countries that have overtaken us on that list.
So in numeracy as well as literacy, our students have gone backwards. And that has wider consequences.
Well, it has a very direct effect on people's human capital. So our students are coming out of high school with fewer skills. And so we have got a situation where people going on to further study, whether that be at TAFE or at university, are less well equipped to do that. That changes what they can learn and how they need to be taught in further education. And for those going into the workforce, it means employers are having to do more on the job training and make up for these lack of skills to the extent that they can. And this all, of course, plays through into productivity. Now, it's not a kind of point for point, one for one decline. You can't say this many PISA points is, you know, this many percentage points decline in productivity. But at a time when we've had the 2010s were the sort of worst productivity decade in 6 decades, I don't think it's any coincidence that that's correlated, at least, with such a decline in educational standards.
Richard, how does this feed into innovation?
There's sort of two views of innovation, one that I think is appealing and one that I think is correct. The sort of appealing view is the lone genius, you know, Steve Jobs kind of thinking big thoughts and that kind of view of the world. Now, that's to take away nothing from Steve Jobs, who, if nothing else, has certainly radically changed my life. But I think the better view of the innovation ecosystem is, sure, acts of sort of genius are important, but it takes a team or it takes a village to actually turn great ideas into innovative reality, into great products that change how we do things. And that's why, again, I think it's no accident that you see a lot of innovation taking place in places like Silicon Valley, where you do have great teams. Google's more than two terrific founders. It's a very large company of great people. Apple's the same, as Tim Cook reminds us on a regular basis. It's not just him. It's a very, very large team. And so it's tempting to say in Australia, well, as long as the best, you know, the top 1% are still doing great, then we're okay. I think that's not the best view. I think the better view is that we really need a lot of people, maybe not everyone, but we need the top 10 or 20% to be really fabulous if we're going to have good innovation. And as we talked about, performance at the top is going down. And so that's really concerning for innovation as well as productivity.
I'm Richard Aidy. This is The Money. Today, the problem of falling educational standards in numeracy and literacy. Literacy is the one we're really focused on. 1 in 3 children struggle with reading, and for adults, it's worse. Jordana Hunter from the Grattan Institute says to change that, we have to be really clear on what the evidence says on the teaching of reading.
What we know is that a structured literacy approach with a heavy focus on phonics and phonemic awareness in the early years of primary school, so I'm talking foundation, year 1 and year 2, is really, really critical. And this is about supporting our students to decode words accurately and quickly. And that's really the first step that students need to master to get on their reading journey.
So now, just to clarify, when you say phonics, I am old enough to have been taught to sound things out. Is that kind of part of it?
That's right. So phonics is about breaking down the letter sound combinations so that students can read words on the page and read unfamiliar words. Now, most schools do some phonics, but a structured literacy approach is about making sure that there is a really strong sequential approach to teaching letter sound combinations and lots of opportunities for students to practice those letter sound combinations as they're mastering them. So schools that do this really well will often use decodable texts. They're short books or stories that have a really strong focus on those letter sound combinations that students have already learnt. So it's a little bit like riding a bike with training wheels, those opportunities for practice so that students can achieve mastery. But I do want to be clear, it's not just about phonics. So phonics is a really important part of the puzzle. But what we know is that reading comprehension, so that's understanding the words that you've read, is really the key goal. Reading comprehension is strongly related to vocabulary and background knowledge. So we need to be really focusing on building students' vocabulary and background knowledge. And that really should be starting in that foundation year and continuing right through primary and secondary school.
Another key is investing in the teachers. Jessica Del Rio from Equity Economics.
I've spoken to a lot of teachers and they tell me that what they want is access to really great professional development and learning, to coaching, to micro-credentials at universities. They want access to the best quality programs, to really great teacher workbooks, to student workbooks. They want access to good screening tools that will help them to find the children who are struggling. And they want to be able to provide small group intervention support to the children who need a bit of extra help to catch up to their peers.
Right. Okay. So getting rid of the old materials that aren't helpful and old approaches, bringing teachers up to speed. I suppose another part of it is making sure that we kind of capture those kids who are struggling more than others too.
if we want to find the kids who are struggling, there's really good screening tools that we can use, and they can actually start in early childhood settings where you can screen for language and literacy deficits. If we're just looking at school, then the year one phonics check would be a really effective way to find those children who haven't acquired the basic skills needed for reading. And some states and territories in Australia have already put this in place. South Australia was a leading jurisdiction. New South Wales wasn't far behind. Tasmania and Queensland are following. But not all jurisdictions have it in place. And that means that there are some kids who, when they are learning to read, are going to fall through the cracks.
When that happens, the evidence says, we have to act quickly.
One of the things we do know is that if students start to fall behind, if we can intervene really early with really structured intervention programs that focus quite specifically on the particular aspect of reading that a child is struggling with, we can do a lot to get them back on track. Now, the research would suggest around 20% of students will need some form of intervention support. The research also shows that the earlier you provide this support and get those students back on the learning bus, the less support you actually need to provide. So it's cost effective to keep a really close eye on those students and intervene early rather than, you know, sometimes it's called this wait to fail approach. So, you know, sometimes there's this idea, oh, well, you know, Mary is struggling with her reading. She's finding a little bit hard. She's just taking a little bit longer than everybody else. She'll get there in the end. Well, actually, what we know is that the minute we think Mary might be having a hard time, we make that real effort to identify what the challenge is and provide the additional support, get her back on the learning bus and make sure that she's set up for the future.
We can see where this is working really well by looking at the Catholic education system here in Canberra, where I'm based. They're using a tool called Dibbles, which allows them to do screening at the beginning, middle and end of the year for the skills needed for reading. And those children who need extra help are identified through those screening tools. The children are placed into small group pods with the objective of giving them the targeted support that they need so that they can catch up to the rest of the class.
The Grattan Institute's report, The Reading Guarantee, wants all schools, public, Catholic and independent, to commit to 6 steps. You can see the whole thing via a link on the Money's homepage, but they include a pledge that at least 90% of students will become proficient readers, specific guidelines on evidence-based teaching for schools, high-quality curriculum materials, a big investment in teachers.
All schools, primary and secondary, should have an in-school literacy instructional specialist. Now, that person should be paid a higher salary than classroom teachers, and that's really to signal the significant responsibility and expertise required to do this role well. We're recommending those specialist teachers be paid about $40,000 more than the top level of classroom teacher salaries. And they would be responsible for overseeing the literacy program, overseeing the intervention supports for struggling students, but critically also doing that in-classroom coaching with teachers so they can help teachers refine their practice and get better over time.
And to work out who will need the help, she wants mandatory screening across the country.
The other thing we're recommending is that all states and territories implement a nationally consistent 40-item phonics screening check in year one. Now, we think this is really important as a health check on how students are going at mastering those foundational reading skills. At the moment, the first time we get a national picture of how students are travelling is in year three, and that really is too late because by the time students are in year three, they should have mastered the foundations of decoding and be moving on from learning to read to reading to learn. So getting that nationally consistent picture of how our year one students are going in phonics, we think is really important.
That's something Jessica Del Rio agrees with. Actually, there's a lot of overlap in terms of recommendations between the Grattan report and one that Equity Economics has done, saving money by spending money, solving illiteracy in Australia. Again, you'll find a link on the homepage. Jessica Del Rio, saving money by spending money. How much money were we talking about?
Well, we estimate that it would cost about $942 million just for 1 year, for the one first startup year. But it's not that much in the scheme of things when we know that it would deliver a 13-time return on investment of $12 billion for additional earnings for these children. And I guess the money is there because solving literacy is one of the most achievable social policy challenges of our lifetime. And if we have a will as a community to do something about it, government will find the money. The independent school sector will find the money. The Catholic sector will find the money. The question is, do we have the will to invest?
So that $942 million, how does that break down? What's it made up of?
Well, we have $136 million in professional learning for teachers who are teaching children to read in kindy, year one and year two. These teachers want the training because they didn't get it at university. So we looked at South Australia, which has a model where they have literacy guarantee unit coaches, and we use that to extrapolate the costs of providing coaches across Australia.
That's the professional learning for teachers.
That's the professional learning. And then we have $139 million for evidence-based, really high-quality curriculum materials for these same group of students and teachers in kindy to year two. There are really wonderful curriculum products available, which we know will lift literacy outcomes. And some are free, some come at a cost, but they all require training for teachers. So to estimate the cost of those materials, we looked to Catholic schools in Canberra, who have got really fantastic results since they made these changes to resources. In 2019, about 40% of the Catholic schools in Canberra were underperforming in reading. 4 years later, after their big reform process, they got that down to 4% of schools underperforming. And that Catholic model really sets the benchmark for the rest of Australia. And we worked out it would cost $139 million to roll out these really high-quality evidence-based curriculum materials across the rest of Australia.
There's $137 million for that year one phonics check and another in the first year of high school, $40 million for the decodable readers, the books that enable children to crack the code that letters and sounds make, and the big ticket item, providing the small group interventions for the kids that need them from preschool to year 12. That's $491 million. It's real money. But for context, we spend more than $70 billion a year on schools, and despite that, one in three children struggle to read. Jordana Hunter.
The pieces that will cost the most are definitely around that workforce. So improving the quality of training is actually quite straightforward, but giving teachers the time release to do additional training is more expensive. Now, the good news is that many jurisdictions already have professional development requirements. And in Victoria, for example, there's 4 days a year set aside for teachers to engage in professional development. So there is time available already. It's a question of making sure that that time for PD is spent on effective PD as possible. In terms of developing those catch-up intervention programs, they can add up in terms of cost. Now, we estimate that it would cost around $500 million a year to deliver an effective intervention program, catch-up tutoring, to meet the literacy needs of 20% of the student population.
Economist Richard Holden has been thinking about why we've had the decline in both literacy and numeracy over the last 20 years or so.
I don't think we have a definitive answer, but I think we've got some pretty good clues about what's going on. I think one of those clues is that, and this is to take away nothing from teachers today, but there was a kind of artificial boost to the quality of the teaching profession in, roughly speaking, the sort of 50s through the 1950s through the 1990s that came from a bad thing, which was gender discrimination against women. And if you think about, you know, women coming out of high school and university in the 1950s, for a whole range of reasons that thankfully we've corrected, perhaps not completely, but, you know, to some meaningful degree, women had relatively few options. It was really hard to be a doctor or a lawyer or a consultant or an investment banker or a startup founder if you were a woman in the 1950s or 60s or 70s or 80s. So a lot of those women went into the teaching profession. That's a fact that's well documented. And a lot of them were great teachers. So we had an artificial boost to having all these totally fantastic people becoming teachers. Now, thankfully, the gender discrimination's become less severe. That's also proved to provide opportunities outside the teaching profession. So that's one thing. And we shouldn't be you know, chagrined about that. We should welcome that, but we should also acknowledge that it's had an impact on the teaching profession.
The other part of it, he says, might well come from how we train teachers.
There was a time, and I think it was probably true, that the people who taught, say, you or me in high school, and maybe I'm showing my age and I've sort of revealed yours unfairly and implicitly, but I certainly remember that most of the people that taught me in high school had done a university degree in arts or science or economics or maybe engineering, and then gone and done a dip ed to kind of help learn the craft of teaching or get a start on the craft of teaching. But they'd done degrees with a lot of subject matter expertise. And now it's much more typical for people to do a Bachelor of Education, which has less subject matter expertise and more focus on so-called pedagogy. And just that balance is very different. So people talk a lot, and rightly so, about how there are concerningly few teachers who are trained in mathematics, who are actually teaching mathematics. It might be less dramatic, but the same thing is true in English and in history and in foreign languages. And we should be aware of that, and we should try and remedy that. The second part of that is, okay, this so-called pedagogy, what is that stuff? And I'd invite listeners to just go and glance at any university Bachelor of Education syllabus. They're all online. And form your own judgment about how useful some of that material is and how much it veers into interesting, but not necessarily very useful if you're going to be a teacher, detours into postmodernism, post-structuralism, and so on, rather than actually teaching people how to teach. And that sort of manifests itself, that philosophical shift manifests itself in a move away from direct instruction, yeah, as it's known, or explicit instruction, you know, a teacher actually teaching kids stuff. And my own view is we need to move back. It might be a little bit unfashionable and it might be a little bit old school, but a move back towards things like explicit instruction, and that means things like phonics as a very concrete example.
0 times 6 is 0. 1 times 6 is 6.
Apart from something that fundamental, there's another fundamental. We know how much funding we need to deliver to improve standards. This is the Gonski stuff. But only the ACT schools have Gonski recommended levels of funding. The National School Reform Agreements between the Commonwealth and the states are being negotiated at the moment. Jordana, is there an opportunity right now to implement what you've been calling for?
I think there is. I'm feeling optimistic about this particular moment in school education. The Commonwealth Minister, Jason Clare, has made it very, very clear that he wants states and territories to be investing in reforms that are proven to work to lift outcomes for students. And Minister Clare is particularly concerned about improving literacy outcomes for disadvantaged students, making sure we help them catch up. So there are negotiations happening right now to get all states and territory government schools up to 100% of the Gonski schooling resource standard model. And that will involve the Commonwealth government tipping in a little bit more funding for government schools and states and territories also increasing their contribution. Now, if that gets over the line, and I am optimistic that that will happen, there will be more additional funding for public schools in particular. And that could really, if we're smart about how we spend that money, have a huge impact on improving literacy outcomes.
Jordana Hunter's the Education Program Director at the Grattan Institute. You also heard from Professor Richard Holden, Director of the Economics of Education Knowledge Hub at the University of New South Wales, and Jessica Del Rio, Lead for Government and Public Finance at Equity Economics. The money comes to you from Gadigal Land, Sydney. It's produced by Kate McDonald. Our sound engineer is Roy Huberman. I'm Richard Adie.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.